Zongers, you could be advertising your product, yourself, or your wares in this very slot. The Project Entertainment Network offers a wide variety of advertising options on this podcast and across all the podcasts on over 24 shows that reach a wide array of listeners. Podcasts are one of the best values in advertising because, unlike any other mediums, they offer a stunning 80% product and brand name recall. Podcasts offer a unique opportunity to reach elusive consumer bases like millennials and cord cutters. With prices starting at just $35, right on up to the elite $1,800 network-wide sponsorship level, the Project Entertainment Network has advertising options to meet your marketing budget. So visit projectentertainmentnetwork.com/advertising or reach out to armandrosamilia@gmail.com to inquire about advertising options and rates today. This is your opportunity to advertise on Bazan and all the other podcasts on the Project Entertainment Network.
The following podcast is an exclusive presentation of Project Entertainment Network.
Bazan.
Bazan.
Bazan. Bazan. Bazan.
Bazan. Bazan. Bazan. Bazan. Bazan.
This is Bazong, the bizarre and weird fiction podcast with me, your host, Mr. Frank. What's going on, Zongers? Thank you for joining us for the Big Bazong Show once again. Always happy to have you fine folks out there checking in with Bazong week after week. That's why I love you, Zongers. And Zongers, I've got a nice treat for you this week. I got a writer I never was even aware of before, and I'm so glad I've started. Anybody paying attention? I've started a scheduling program where anybody can just go in and pick out an interview time slot when they'd like to come on the show, and you know, it's all up to you. I just give you the address and you pick it out. Whatever time slots are open for interviewing, and it's opened up the doors to get a lot of people like I'm not aware of. So they're able to sign up themselves. It opened up a door. There was like no roadblock. I was only reaching out to people who I knew. So this has been a great avenue so far. And we get people like this week's guest, William Perk. He's the author of Killing Poppy, out now from Apocalypse Party Press. That's all new stuff to me. But he does exist in the bizarro world. So as you'll hear, he's been around, and he's flown under my radar. But he's a great guy. I had a lot of fun learning about him. So, Zongers, it's time you, too, learn about this week's guest, the one and only Mr. William Perk. Oh, give us the gong. I'd like to welcome to Bazong this week a writer I've never talked to before. He's got a new book out. It looks like his first book out. So we're going to find out what's going on with this new name in the bizarre and weird fiction realms. Welcome to Bazong, the one and only Mr. William Perk. William, welcome to Bazong.
Hey, thanks, Frank. Thanks for having me on.
So are you really a new face to the bizarre and weird fiction realms, or have you been lurking in the corners, in the shadows?
Oh, I kind of been lurking for, you know, a couple years. I've been to a few bizarro cons a few years ago. But this is my first book. Yeah.
So it's an interesting book. Your new book just came out right at the end of September. It's called Killing Poppy. It's out from Apocalypse Party Press. And about the really only thing I noticed about it is you have a blurb from Cameron Pierce. So like that told me right away you have some sort of bizarro connection. So is this really your first shot at even being serious about writing? Have you been writing? What's been your trajectory so far to get to Killing Poppy?
Well, I mean, I've written before, but this is really kind of my first piece that I've really finished, you know, and feel really good about putting out into the world. So it is. It's my first piece.
I like it. Now, so you've been to BizarroCon, like you said. You know, you have Cameron Pierce you know, blurbing stuff for you. So, and of course, you're from the Portland area. At what point here did you become even aware of Bizarro?
Well, I discovered Bizarro. I mean, it must have been like 2009 or something like that when I pick, or I'm not sure when Jeremy Robert Johnson's book, his short book came out. But I picked up his book, and it's what kind of introduced me into Bizarro.
I see. I got it. So that was, and that's like 2009. That's, you know, that's going back quite a way. So why has it taken it this long for you, essentially 9 years, to for you to start writing something and get it published?
I would say drugs. a drug addiction.
Well, it's a good answer, because it all kind of relates back to like Jeremy Robert Johnson, and his work is very drug fueled type of work. Is that where the connection was for you back then?
Well, yeah, I mean, I was kind of strung out, and I actually picked up it was the Angel Dust Apocalypse at the Pals on Hawthorne. And he actually had signed it, and I think his business card was in there too. It was in the book. So I got that, and I read it, and I was just blown away. And then I, you know, got into some other Bizarro books and stuff.
Now, I don't regularly like equate people who are kind of strung out, as you said, like into reading books. Were you always a bookish type of person, always reading?
No, definitely not.
Was it just Angel Dust? Like maybe you got confused and thought there might have been some in the book or something like that?
Well, I mean, I'd go through phases, you know. So go through phases where I, you know, would read a lot, and then go through phases where, you know, watch a lot of movies, and so it's kind of off and on, you know. And it is, I guess, it was just a stage of my life where I was reading more, you know.
Now, it's not a situation where you would like credit like Jeremy Robert Johnson from, you know, after reading the book, like saving you, delivering you from drugs, wanting to go on the street now. It's it's not going to be one of those stories, is it?
No, not quite. No, so I stayed strung out for a few more years after that. So
just on your own, you hit your personal, I'm done with this stuff, and I guess maybe it's fair that you're cleaned up, maybe it's not. But obviously you have presence of mind now to write a whole book. How long did it take you to write Killing Poppy?
Well, I started Killing Poppy in rehab, actually, at Serenity Lane back in 2013, October 2013. So that's when I started it. And it took me, I mean, I have a hard time considering myself like as a writer, right? Like, mm-hmm. So it took me about 2 years to complete this, which is, I know, a long time. I mean, I know, you know, a lot of people will pump out books in like 2 months, which is just, you know, blows my mind. So I mean, it took me 2 years. Obviously it wasn't, you know, 7 days a week, but, I edited it quite a bit, like 100 times or something, you know, so I really poured a lot into this. So
was it, since it's something that you started while you were doing rehab, was this sort of like your project to sort of help you get through type of thing, or was this really kind of a book that was in you, and then that downtime you had, or whatever you would call it, you know, doing rehab, was like, this is the perfect moment to start on this?
Well, I mean, I wasn't planning it when I went into rehab. And what happened was they gave us an assignment to write a goodbye letter to our drug of choice. So that's kind of, that's where it started. So I started this letter, Goodbye Poppy. And it was a letter to my drug addiction, opiates, you know. And so I started this goodbye letter to my drug of choice, my drug addiction. And then I just continued writing this letter. And then when I got out of rehab, I built a story around this letter that was fictional. And, so that's, it just kind of, you know, I just kept rolling with it, you know?
Now, had you started writing this like pre-attending BizarreCon, or was it sort of a situation where, you know, you attended BizarreCon and kind of had that inspiration to want to write something?
No, I started this before BizarreCon. I didn't go to my first BizarreCon until after I got out of rehab. So I believe my first BizarreCon was 2000. I got out of rehab October of 2013. I think my first BizarreCon was 2014.
Okay. So
it was like a year, you know.
So the first
a year
time,
later.
The first time you attend BizarreCon, you're attending as a fan, I guess, is the best way to put it initially.
Definitely. Yeah. Yeah. Definitely. So, yeah. And just, you know, just like meeting people, and, you know.
Of course.
And yeah. It sounded cool.
And so, like, while you were there at the first one, were you kind of like saying, yeah, you know, I'm writing a thing, I don't know, you know, that type of thing, sort of the beginning to network? Because it seems like you've had, despite the fact, well, I guess we can get into it, but you had some bizarre contacts or networking going on, you know, while you were making this book. So did you kind of put it in your ears?
Well, I went to BizarreCon like 2 or 3 years in a row. So I met a bunch of people, and the first year I went there, they had the buy an author a beer program. So, which was pretty cool when they did that. So, I was fortunate enough to like, you know, sit down with a few authors, my first BizarreCon, and just kind of like, you know, shoot the shit with them. And, so, and then, you know, and then I just met some other, you know, other cool people, other cool writers, and, yeah, just built some friendships, you know.
I like that concept of the buy an author a beer. I'm going to have to start that out on the East Coast here.
Yeah, it was great. Yeah, it was cool, you know, because it was like, I mean, I didn't know anyone, so it was like, it's kind of hard to, you know, and it's with someone, I didn't have anything to my name, you know, so it was kind of cool to have that option available.
Were you thinking even at that point, like, you know, I'd like to do a thing, I'd like to write a thing, or was that really at that point not even a serious consideration?
Well, I was doing some like performance art. I had a performance art project I had started. So I was kind of, and you know, like I was saying, I don't really consider myself a writer. I like to give gifts, I guess. And it seems like this, you know, like writing this book is kind of like making this gift, and I'm like giving it to people. And that's kind of how I felt like with my performance art project. It was kind of like, I was like making these cool little gifts and I was giving them to people. So, you know, I don't feel like it's like my craft by any means, you know? But I had started this performance art project, that I'd been doing for almost a year when, I was at my first BizarreCon. So, I felt like I was doing some cool shit, you know?
I can dig it. So there was still some sort of like an entertainment creativity vibe
right
within you, despite whether you have, I guess, a lot of authors, you know, writers, whatever you want to call them, just do get that imposter syndrome, you know, at any kind of point. You know, I myself have had, you know, like, what do I call myself, a writer? I don't really do that and everything. But so I think that's natural. I think a lot of people go through that. But
right.
I mean, now you have a book. There is a book that is penned by
yes.
you out in the world. Do you still feel like, I'm not really a writer?
I wrote a cool thing, you know, and, but I'm not, I don't know. I don't consider myself a writer, you know, I'm not sure what I call myself, but, you know, I just like to like do cool shit, make cool shit, and, you know, give gifts. So, I'm not sure what that would make me.
Fair enough. I get it. I think so many other people really, really get it.
I've only been off of heroin for a few years. Give me a break.
I mean, I think if we go back in history, some of the world's greatest writers were either on or had been on heroin at some point in their life. So,
yeah.
You know,
yeah.
You may have a leg up on a lot of people in that sense, too. So now, okay, the book is out. It's gotten done. You're out now. You have this book out. Tell me about, is this, you have this, it's out with Apocalypse Party Press. Is this a legit press that you've had published through, or is this sort of your self-publishing facade?
Well, it's Ben DeVos.
Okay.
His press, yeah. So, I mean, I submitted Killing Poppy to, you know, a bunch of presses, you know, like tons of them. So, yeah. So, it's he's out in Philadelphia, and he's out in Philly, Ben DeVos, and he's doing cool shit. He's also an author. Yeah, he's doing cool shit. So
very cool. I'm familiar with Ben. I hadn't heard of the press before. Is it a new sort of thing, or has he been doing it?
I think he's been doing it for a couple of years, but just like, you know, he's slowly been building some momentum, you know.
Is it? Do you get a sense, like, I mean, you can't speak for him, but do you get a sense of, like, he's trying to maybe pick up where Broken River, like, you know, leaves off type of a vibe they're doing?
I definitely think he's gotten some inspiration from Broken River, for sure. You know, definitely maybe, I mean, also putting out cool shit, but I think, you know, there's definitely some differences, you know. But definitely inspiration from Broken River.
Is that sort of like also how you wanted to, you know, represent the book as a sort of, you know, that vibe of, you know, what a Broken River type of press that puts out those, I don't know, it's just Jeremy Robert Johnson is a very, he has a very unique sort of brand for himself. So, and you seem to gel with that type of vibe too.
Yeah, well, I mean, David's Osborne's putting out cool shit, yeah. And I love his covers, and you know, I love what he's doing. So, I mean, I definitely got inspired by what he's doing and look up to him and his press. So, yeah, I think so.
Sweet. So, how long had you been shopping the book for?
How long had I been shopping it for? I don't know, maybe like 6 months or something.
Not bad.
Not sure.
Not bad.
Maybe a year. I don't. I'm not quite sure.
Uh huh.
I mean, it's hard to say, because I would, you know, I would submit it to a few places, and then, like, you know, like a month or two later, I would submit it to some more, and then, so I mean, it's hard to say, mm-hmm. You know.
Yeah. No, I get that. So, you know, so you have this sort of 6 month to a year looking windows thing. How polished was the book when you're presenting it? Did you have it pretty well, pretty shiny to you, or once, say like once Apocalypse Party accepted it, it still needed some work?
I think it still needed some work. You know, I mean, Cameron helped edit the book, and then David Osborne. He went through the book, and then Ben DeVos, you know, went over it. So I think it's, I mean, I felt like it was pretty polished by the time Apocalypse Party got it, but, you know, Ben still went over it, and, you know, definitely, and found some improvements and some changes that we made. So,
yeah, I mean, I'm going to say, like, if Cameron and J. David Osborne had gone over it with their eyes first, even before getting to the publisher, I mean, it must have looked pretty freaking spiffy by then to have those guys. I mean, not everybody has that opportunity to get folks of that caliber, you know, get their eyes on your work before you start submitting around. That's pretty awesome.
Yeah, it's pretty cool. And also, we didn't have the images or the artwork when I first submitted it to Apocalypse Party. The book has artwork, about 15 images or so, 12 to 15 images from four Portland street artists. So they're street artists featured in the book. And that's something that kind of Ben and I, you know, thought of.
That is a cool thing. Like you had mentioned to me, like, you know, you kind of wanted to get a copy of the books in my hand because, you know, not so much to read the story, but you felt the artwork was kind of important to go into. So it sounds like the artwork in this book is a pretty serious. Is it a companion to the? You think something gets lost in translation without the pictures?
Yeah, I think so. I definitely think it's It's part of the story. I mean, the Killing Poppy takes place in Portland, and kind of like it's a tale of a junkie, so like living on the street. Mm-hmm. So the street art adds quite a bit to it, and I definitely think without it, it's incomplete.
I like that. Now, so it's four different street artists, and these people that you were already familiar with and you kind of wanted to, you know, grab them and put them on the project and spotlight them, or were these people that you, you know, procured because of the book?
I'd met a bunch of street artists from doing the performance art project that I was doing a few years back. Well, a couple of years back, Save Portland from Hell was the performance art project. And I did some wheat pasting and some street art and flyers and stuff like that. So, you know, these are four of the, you know, the street artists that I really, really look up to and admire and respect. And I love their work, and, they're also different, you know, so, you know, like, so we've got Scam, and he's dark. And we've got Sin Canvas. He's also dark. And then we've got Woke Face, who is very lighthearted. She does some, kind of optimistic, cool shit. And then Krace also does dark. So, I mean, a lot of dark, but there is some light to balance it out, you know.
And that's, I guess, important to the story to have that balance too, I have to assume.
Oh yeah, definitely. I think so for sure. Cause it's a dark story. And I tried to balance it with humor, you know? And I think I did a good job, but, I guess we'll leave that up to the readers.
True. Very true. Now, of course we started this all out by, you know, like connecting, what's your connection to Bizarro, the people, you know, the networking, the BizarroCon. Do you think that Killing Poppy is a Bizarro story, or you think it may be something else?
I think it has elements of it for sure. I'm not quite sure where it would land, you know? Mm-hmm. But it definitely has elements of Bizarro in it. You know, it's tragedy, it's, you know, comedy. I don't know. I'm not sure. I'm not quite sure where it would land, but it's definitely a junkie tale. It's a tale of a heroin addict.
I mean, it definitely sounds to me like, having not read the book, but just going over what we're talking with here and looking at the synopsis of the book, that, you know, pretty much if you can get on board with Jeremy Robert Johnson or even J. David Osborne, their style of writing, and they get to be considered Bizarro, it sounds like you're right in there, like in that sort of arena of whatever Bizarro is.
Yeah, maybe in the cracks somewhere.
In the, oh, I forgot. It's John Skip put it best. It was like, it exists parallel to or in juxtaposition to Bizarro. That's a wonderful term. Sort of like, it's not exactly Bizarro, but it's got that feel.
Yeah, definitely.
Now, is it? It's not like a strange world or anything. This is our world. It's sort of a realistic story, right?
I wouldn't. I mean, it's like I said, it's set in Portland, 2013. So, but there's almost kind of like some magical realism to it, you know?
Okay.
So there's things that wouldn't happen in real life, but, you know, but it's not like kooky or anything.
Yeah, it has. Oh, how much really in the meat of the story? How much is it like sort of biographical back to you and your experiences?
Well, I mean, I pulled from my experiences, you know, and the characters I pulled from people in my life or that have been in my life, you know. So a lot of it is pulled, you know, from my direct experiences. Of course, there's murder and body parts and stuff. So that's not directly from my experience.
Okay, so there wasn't. You didn't have to.
I haven't chopped up any body parts.
Not yet. All right.
Yeah, not yet.
But you haven't. Yet. There weren't like uncomfortable moments or like, should I really be talking about this sort of things in the book?
Well, I mean, that's the beauty of, you know, of writing fiction is I can tell secrets or parts about my life and, you know, embellish them or, you know, change them, you know. And there's that distance, you know, between me.
And nobody has to be none the wiser as to what's real and what's not.
Exactly.
I understand that. But in the same.
But I did shoot it, you know, bang heroin for quite a while. So, you know.
Right. Yeah. It's you obviously had some experiences that not everybody has, but certainly a lot of people do. So I guess, you know, there has to be an authenticity to it all, despite like the weird magic realism and stuff like that. And, you know, you can't hide your real life experience. You almost can't not write about it, I guess, is the best way to put it.
Yeah, definitely.
So from here. You have that struggle. Am I a writer? Am I not a writer? Are you going to continue to write books, or is it still going to be sort of a back burner thing for you? You're more like into the being a performance artist. You know, what does the future look like for you?
Well, I'm working on a couple other projects. You know, I've started another writing another story that it's incomplete right now, but I'm not quite sure exactly what I'm going to put out next, though. Mm-hmm. You know,
mm-hmm. What are the possibilities for you? I mean, you know, you got a book now, but you could go.
Probably getting a job. And,
well, that's not
so
fun.
I'm in between jobs right now. Uh-huh. So that's kind of my high priority right now.
Yeah. Yeah. It's not very romantic, but it's quite practical.
Exactly.
Yeah. So I hear that, but you're still like, you know, being a performer, being even writing a creative person. That's something you're always going to be, though, right?
Oh yeah, definitely. I'm always going to be, you know, doing cool shit, making cool shit. Sin Canvas made really cool stencil of the cover of Killing Poppy. It doesn't say Killing Poppy. It just has the image of the syringe with the wings that Matthew Revere did. So fucking, it's an amazing cover in my opinion that Revere did.
Yeah.
So Sin Canvas, he made stencils, and we're gonna go out wheat pasting. You know, so as soon as the weather, you know, clears up, we're gonna hit the streets and do some cool wheat pasting and stuff.
You got it. I am not in touch with that type of thing. Tell me, what is wheat pasting?
Well, it's, you know, a lot of some of the street art you see out there. It's so you make the posters with the image on it, uh-huh. on the large posters, and then you make paste out of like wheat or rice or whatever, and then we just go out late, you know, like 2 a.m. or something, and then try and find buildings that or walls that you're not going to get arrested for fucking with, you know. So and then we just put paste all over the wall, and then put the poster on it, and then paste again. So, and then it dries up, and then you've got really cool images, you know, all over the walls and, you know, streets. So it's fun. It's really fun. I mean, it makes me feel like a kid again when we're out doing that, you know.
That sounds like a very, very Portland type of thing to do.
Yeah.
Now, what, like, is it, but are you doing it? Are you doing it for the art, or does it also serve as like a marketing thing? Because, I mean, like you said, that image, like the book cover, the mm-hmm. syringe with the angel wings, it's gorgeous. So, like, in and of itself, it you know, without all the titling and everything and the words, mm-hmm. it's pretty stark imagery, but yet, also, you know, if you're plastering that around town, it is sort of also marketing, no?
Oh, yeah, no, definitely. But at the same time, I'm not putting the name and my name, and I'm not putting like a barcode that you can scan that goes directly to Amazon. You know, I'm not really concerned with that. I'm more concerned with it looks cool, and I don't know. I mean, I'm not motivated by like selling copies. You know,
right?
That's not my motive. That's not really my motivation.
No, but like, but if you have like, you know, the artistic minded people, the people take notice of this stuff that's plastered all around town, and then you know, they're those type of like minded people are going to show up. Chances are, in places that you might be selling the book, and then they'll recognize, like they'll make that connection
from
seeing it around town. So like, I'm not like saying calling you a sellout or nothing for doing it, but but like you're still, it's that, you know, like that image. Like we're, you know, we're in the world of Instagram here, and everything is like just bang bang bang, image image image. So like it's that quick thing. It's a very simple image. It's stark, and you know, if somebody sees that on the street and they see that on the table, they're gonna come up to you like, I remember seeing that, and what's going on here? Like it's a really cool, you know, a conversation starter type of thing if people are connecting with it.
Yeah, definitely. No, I mean, I think you're right. You know, I mean, I just do as much as I can. And then, you know, the results are out of my control. You know, whatever happens is out of my control. I just do what I can, you know.
I got you. Now, you know, the book has been out there, you know, roughly a month now. Have you been getting some feedback from the bizarro world out there here, and what people's reactions are to it yet?
I got this message from this girl a few days ago, and she found my book in a motel room. Nice. And she read it, and then she messaged me on Facebook, and then we met up for coffee last night and like just shot the shit. You know, and she's also, you know, like kind of in and out of recovery. And it was cool. It was a cool experience, you know, just that she found my book and read it and then messaged me. And then we like met up and, you know, had a coffee and cigarette. And it was beautiful.
That's, you know, like it's almost like, isn't that really what it's all about?
Yeah.
You know, that's too cool. It also sounds like another very Portland type of thing to happen, but I mean that.
Well, I think maybe what happened is I gave my book to a friend who's homeless, and I think maybe he lost it and then she found it.
but that's the whole, like that's the journey every book should take, you know?
Yeah, totally. Totally.
I love that story. That's just perfect. That is just perfect. Like that's exactly what every book should, because I remember like in the sort of the as the internet was getting popular, I don't even remember the name of this website, but there was a website that was basically encouraging you to sort of register your book with the website, and then you'd print out a little thing on a paper, and you're supposed to like tape or glue it onto the inside of the book. This is this book and whatever, and it was released here, and you're supposed to just like leave books around town and whatnot, and then when people find these books, they're supposed to take them and read them, and then go to this website and like report back, hey, I found this book here and everything, and you're supposed to be able to track, you know, the journey that these books take, like when you like release them to the world. I wish to God I could remember off the top of my head, because I would even want to go back and see if this website exists, and I did it for at least a year. I was doing that to like whatever, because you know, this is before like digital books became anything, and I'm like, what do I do with all these books? And like that seemed like such like the perfect thing, and I would do that, and I'd just put them out in, you know, public places or whatever, and it seemed cool, and it was like right before, like maybe a year or two right before like the Kindle came out and exploded on the scene. So I never really got a chance to follow up on that stuff, but it really seemed awesome. And I mean, in my mind, that's sort of like what should happen with books. Like you take them, you read them, and then you let them go in the world. Let other people enjoy them too. So like to hear like that happened, and then the ultimate thing like is she got back to you and said, I love this, and you were able to go out and have a moment and to sort of just bond over the experience of the book. I mean, that is absolute perfection.
Oh, yeah, it was awesome. You know, I hooked her up with some Sin Canvas art, T-shirt and stuff and stickers. And, yeah, it was great. You know, but that's a cool idea. That's a really cool idea with the leaving the books out like that, you know.
Yeah, now my mind's I'm going to have to find out after we're done. I'm going to have to find out what that is, and maybe I'll tag it onto this the show notes here or something, because, yeah, it was a really cool idea. And I don't know, you know, as much as the digital stuff is has taken over publishing so much, I still like, you know, going out to conventions or, you know, just book signings. Like I always say, like, I wanted so badly to get away from that physical book thing just because it was taking so much space up in my life. But now, right, I use it as a, like, a souvenir, as a token of this thing that I went to, that I did, and I have so many books back in my life again, and I enjoy it. I hate that it takes up space, but I really do enjoy having the physical books still. They'll never go away.
Yeah.
Now maybe I'm going to have to start carrying some around me, leaving them in motel rooms. And
strategic places,
facilitating, like, maybe we'll revive that site if I ever figure out what the heck it was.
Yeah, no shit, it'd be great.
That is totally awesome. Well, William, we've certainly learned a lot about you this evening, and I'm glad, like, you know, you came in, and I'm like, I don't know, William Perk, never heard of him in my life, but I'm glad we got to talk and introduce you to the bizarro world out there, to these people, because you're doing some really cool ass shit. You're doing some really, you know, like I said, you're not a sellout. It's all about just the beauty and of art and everything like that. So I think that's the biggest thing to take away from what we're doing. And, you know, congratulations on the book and your story and your tenacity. And I hope to see more stuff from you in some form or another in the future.
Hey, thanks, Frank. Thanks a lot for having me on. I appreciate it. I had fun.
William Perk, Zongers. I had a lot of fun interviewing the dude and just learning about him. Like I said, I didn't really know about him. I was not aware about him at all. So that's fun when I can introduce myself to a brand new writer who I'm completely unfamiliar with, and through the interviewing and conversation process, get to know a really cool person. So I hope you also enjoyed that journey as well, Zongers. Check out that Killing Poppy. Sounds to me like if you're into Skullcrack City, like, he might be like the new wave of that Jeremy Robert Johnson sort of bizarro, noir-y, cool-ass vibe going on there. So I would highly recommend you checking out Killing Poppy as soon as you can get your butt to a place where you can get a book. And Zongers, before you get your butt to a place that you can get a book, why not just slow down a second and check out the Project Entertainment Network's Patreon page, where you, for as little as $1 a month, can get value-added content right on your phone or desktop or wherever it is you might access Patreon. I did not know until recently that Patreon actually has an app for your phone where you could just easily open it up and browse it like you would Facebook or Twitter or any of those. You know, it's like it's its own social media platform. It has a lot of ease of access to the patrons that you subscribe to. And you could subscribe to Project Entertainment Networks, where you get value-added programming, like I do a little thing called Not Bazong on the Project Entertainment Network's Patreon page, where I interview the other show hosts of the Project Entertainment Network's cast of podcasts. Get a little behind the scenes look at what makes them tick, what their motivation is in doing their show, and just kind of have fun learning about them. So that's one of the things you can get. There's also a conspiracy theory podcast. The guys on Your New Opinion do a really kind of a dirty Your New Opinion version behind that little paywall that we have there. And there's other great things. You can win show notes. You can win swag. All kinds of cool stuff over there at Project Entertainment Network's Patreon page for as little as $1 a month. Go check it out now. See if it's right for you, because you love the Project Entertainment Network podcast, not just Bazong, but a lot of them. I'm sure nobody listens to just one PEN podcast. That's crazy. And maybe, Zongers, while you're doing that, maybe you want to get yourself a Bazong shirt. Show your love for the podcast you love. You can access the Project Entertainment Network's merchandise store right through their website. All you got to do is go to projectentertainmentnetwork.com, click on the store tab, and there you'll get access to all the really cool merchandise we have for all the shows, but especially get those cool Bazong shirts. I've got some Bazong shirts myself, my Bazong swag, because I love the merchandise so much. So maybe you want to consider getting yourself a mug or a sticker or a t-shirt. You could get hoodies. You could get flags. All kinds of fun stuff to get to just let the world know that you love Bazong as much as Mr. Frank loves Bazong. And now that we're all done loving Bazong for this week, I'm going to let you all go now and listen to these other great Project Entertainment Network podcasts.
There shall come a podcast like no other. Defenders Dialogue. Marvel Comics' original superhero non-team convenes once again. Comic book writers and authors Brian Keene and Christopher Golden take us back to the 70s and 80s as they discuss Marvel's most dynamic collection of superheroes, Defenders Dialogue with Brian Keene and Christopher Golden, Tuesdays exclusively on Project Entertainment Network.
It was a time when we raced to the TV guide to see what was playing on Monster Movie Matinee that Saturday afternoon, and in some cities, that evening. It was all about werewolves, vampires, giant lizards, and those great Japanese monster movies. Relive it all every week as Jim Adams and Mark Maddox bring you Monster Attack. Monster Attack takes a look at those classic monster movies that we all grew up loving. Join us every week on Monster Attack, exclusively on the Project Entertainment Network.
Hi there. This advisory is brought to you by an Englishman who is angry at butter.
Butter!
I'm Robert Chaz Chute, host of the Excellent Not Perfect podcast. You don't have to be mad at butter. On the Keto Jack diet, fat is good for you. As we say in the keto community, don't blame the butter for what the bread did. Excellent Not Perfect is a podcast that's about stress, mind, body, and keto for weight loss and pursuit of a healthier lifestyle. If you're trying to lose weight and get healthy too, join me every Monday morning for a fresh start on the Excellent Not Perfect podcast on the Excellent Project Entertainment Network.
Butter!
That time, it was because you wanted to hear it again. And he was enthusiastic that time, really.
This has been an exclusive presentation of the Project Entertainment Network.